Ward Marston, thanks so much for getting together to talk about this new CD set with Rachmaninoff playing his symphonic dances for Eugene Ormandy.
I'm delighted to be speaking with you and to tell your listeners about this fantastic discovery that this recording of Rachmaninoff is something nobody knew existed. For years, people have been looking for recordings of Rachmaninoff playing live because he particularly eschewed being recorded live. As a matter of fact, he would not permit himself to be broadcast over the radio, and he would not permit his concerts to be recorded, and he only wanted to make records in the studio where he could be in complete control of what he was playing. Many people who heard him during the 1920s and 30s and early 1940s were quite articulate in explaining that Rachmaninoff's playing in front of an audience was quite different from his studio recordings, much more fluid and having a different dimension than his studio recordings. Rachmaninoff's studio recordings are fantastic, and when he's one of the greatest pianists on record. But hearing this recording is just, it's something that has absolutely transcended my understanding of Rachmaninoff's playing.
Yeah. Wow. So can I back up for a second?
Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about how you became involved in music and how you eventually ended up doing this kind of work?
Oh, that's a long, I could talk for hours about that. As a little kid, I was always interested in music. My parents played classical music for me from the time I was 2 or 3 years old, and I loved it. And I was taken to the Philadelphia Orchestra when I was 5 and 6 years old, and I got to hear opera performances when I was very young, and by the time I was 10, I already was keenly interested in opera. Also, when I was a little boy, there was a transition in recordings, and 78 RPM recordings had sort of been replaced by long playing records. And when I was a kid, people still had their old 78s. A lot of friends of my parents and other people would give me their old records. And so I became very interested in old records. And from the time I was 6 or 7, I started to collect 78 RPM records.
So you became a professional pianist, but you were all the while collecting these old records. And in 1997, you formed your own record company.
Yes, Marston Records. And actually, my piano playing, I'm actually a jazz pianist. I don't play classical music, although I did study classical music when I was a kid. But I'm a jazz pianist, and I have my own, I have a dance band. And we play all over this weekend we're playing in Washington, D.C., you know, so we do that. So I wear two hats because I also have been involved with audio restoration work since the 1970s, where I worked restoring old records, which started out as an outgrowth of my collecting. But I worked doing audio restoration work for Columbia Records, for RCA, BMG, EMI, Deutsche Grammophon, and other smaller record labels. And I finally decided that there were projects that I wanted to do in terms of issuing historic recordings on CD that other record labels weren't interested in doing because there isn't enough sales potential. So my partner, Scott Kessler, and I decided to form Marston Records. And so we've been issuing historic CDs since 1997.
When you say you got into restoring old records,
yeah,
what does it mean to restore or remaster? What are you doing?
Well, you have access to an original recording. Let's say maybe it's a 1902 recording that was made with the acoustic recording method, meaning they used a horn to record, or it might be a later recording that was using a microphone. But whatever recording it is, let's say I have access to that original disc. What I try to do with that disc is to make this, to improve the sound, to get rid of a certain amount of the scratch on the disc. Now, that is always a very touchy subject because it is up to me as an audio engineer to decide, okay, how much intervention am I going to use to actually restore or preserve the recording in the kind of sound that I think people would want to hear so they can enjoy it. And that's really up to me because there is a continuum of restoration work that you can do. You can try to take out all of the noise, but I don't agree with that, because when you take out all the noise, you take out a lot of music as well. And it's never a good thing to overdo restoration work. So my goal is to make the music, make the recording sound as musical as possible. And sometimes that means leaving some of the noise in. And that's a decision I always have to make. And it's always a compromise. And it varies with every recording I remaster. I think I've done about 500, I've remastered about 500 CDs, perhaps more. I've never counted. But and every CD I do is a different case. And so every day that I'm working with different records, I have to make those decisions on a record-by-record basis.
Let's talk about this recording of Rachmaninoff. It was made in the summer of 1940 with Rachmaninoff playing his symphonic dances for Eugene Ormandy. Yep. And talking about how he wanted them performed. Tell us, how did this come to be? How did this recording that you've produced come to be? How was it discovered?
Well, first of all, Ormandy... Actually, Eugene Ormandy told me when he was alive, he told me the story, which has also been written down too, that Rachmaninoff had been composing this piece for orchestra during the summer of, during 1940, and he invited Ormandy to his house out in the Hamptons in the summer to listen to him play through the piece so that Ormandy would have an idea of what it is he was going to be conducting, because Ormandy was given the opportunity and the privilege of conducting the world premiere of the piece with the Philadelphia Orchestra. The premiere was supposed to take place, and did take place, in early January of 1941. And this recording was made, but there's a lot of mystery surrounding this recording. We know it was made on December 20th, just 2 weeks or so prior to the premiere. And it was probably a final run-through that Rachmaninoff was giving with Ormandy.
So this was on a disc?
Yes, these are on discs. And it was done by a home, we don't know exactly, but it was done on a portable, probably a portable home recorder that recorded on discs.
When did you first discover the existence of this recording?
About 10 years ago, the University of Pennsylvania Music Library became the possessors of the Eugene Ormandy record collection. That means the records that were in Eugene Ormandy's private collection. And a friend of mine who was doing research, actually he was doing research on Ormandy, happened to discover a catalog entry. It was an entry for two 10-inch discs. And it said, Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances Played by the Composer, which is an exact copy of what was written on the labels of the record. The labels were typewritten, and they were homemade discs. And this friend of mine, who's a musicologist, phoned me up because he knows about my work, that I'm keenly interested in historic recordings. He said, well, what do you make of this? And I said, well, I can't imagine what it could be, because Rachmaninoff is a pianist, and this recording is a symphonic recording. And I said, I don't think Rachmaninoff conducted it. And we don't have any record of any written record that Rachmaninoff conducted it. In fact, he never did. I thought and thought about it, and I couldn't imagine what this recording could be. So I, through various connections, I requested that I be permitted to make a digital transfer of the discs at the Penn Library, which I did. And of course, when I heard it, I can't even describe the emotions that I felt. It was just something unimaginable to me, that here we are listening to Rachmaninoff performing a symphonic work at the piano as a kind of run-through of the piece for Ormandy. And it is, in a thousand years, we could never have imagined that this could have been recorded, or that even the event actually took place. we actually know a good deal about Rachmaninoff's comings and goings, because, of course, he's such a famous composer. And there are those who know pretty well where he was all the time. But on that particular day in December, we're not quite sure where he was. Presumably in Philadelphia, but he could have been in New York. So we don't quite know, actually. We don't really know where the recording was made.
And we don't know who recorded it.
No, we don't. It may have been recorded without Rachmaninoff's permission. I think it very likely it was made without the composer's permission.
What happened then after you listened to them?
The University of Pennsylvania Library, all the people at the library were also fascinated with the recording, but wanted to make sure that it was presented, that if it was presented, that it simply didn't leak out onto the internet and that it was presented in the proper context. And so this basically has been germinating for many, many years until we could figure out just exactly the best way to issue it. The Ormandy premiere, by the way, was not recorded and not broadcast. So we have no actual recording of the Philadelphia Orchestra premiere of the piece.
Now, when you listen to this recording, you present it two different ways, one chronologically and one, I guess, as it was recorded.
Not exactly chronologically, but the recording was made with Rachmaninoff playing certain parts, and then he would stop and he would repeat certain sections, and he would, there were some comments that he would make, although he's almost impossible to understand what he's saying because the microphone is so far away that you can hear talking, but it's very difficult to make sense of what is being said. You can hear a few words here and there, but it's very difficult to put the picture together. But what we decided to do, because this recording is so important from a scholarly point of view, that we presented it in two ways. We presented as it was recorded with all of the comments and all of the pauses and all of the repeats. And then what I did was I put the recording in musical sequence so that I edited out all of the pauses, I edited out all of the repeated passages, and presented the recording in its proper musical sequence according to the score. Now, also, let me explain one other thing. Since the recording was made on a home disc cutter, there were points where the disc would come to the end and they would have to take, the person making the recording would have to take the record off and flip it over and put the other blank side down and then start the needle cutting the next side again. So there are portions that are missing from the recording. So some of the music is not there. Only about 28 minutes out of, let's say, 34 minutes are actually still survive. So it's not the complete piece, but it's a good part of it. And it's fascinating because what's really interesting is to hear Rachmaninoff actually playing the piece. And, you know, you can only do a certain amount with two hands on the piano. You can't play the entire score, the entire orchestral score. So Rachmaninoff had to make choices as he played to decide what it was he wanted to display. And so it's fascinating to hear those choices that he made, like what to include and what to leave out, and how he made the points that he wanted to make. This was not a performance as a concert. This was a demonstration. It's a run-through for him of, he was trying to demonstrate how he wanted the piece to go. And it's, so it's not a concert, and that has to be understood. This is really, it's not only a unique recording of Rachmaninoff, but it is also a unique recording because I don't know of any other instance of a major composer playing a most improvised version of an orchestral piece.
So what do you learn from the way he plays it?
Well, I think that what you learn is how elastic Rachmaninoff wanted the piece to be played. There's a tremendous amount of elasticity in his performance. A lot of, tempi that are accelerating or decelerating, and also phrasing that crescendos and diminuendos and that sort of thing. And it's also fascinating to learn, what melodic parts Rachmaninoff wanted to bring out.
When you said this made such an emotional, had such an emotional impact on you, was there anything in particular that surprised you or moved you, or just the whole existence of it?
Well, the existence of it, but actually how beautiful the playing is. The playing as I said, it added a completely new dimension to what I had in my mind as what Rachmaninoff's playing was. I mean, I had produced the audio engineering work for the complete Rachmaninoff package that came out on BMG in the early 90s on CD. So I was the audio engineer for that Rachmaninoff package. It's 10 CDs. And so I knew Rachmaninoff's recordings intimately, backward and forward, literally. And so I really knew every note that existed of Rachmaninoff. And of course, I always wondered, what would it be like to hear him play off the record, so to speak? And of course, I knew that I would never hear that, but I did.
So it's a 3-CD set. Yeah. It's bookended by these symphonic dances. And then in the middle, you chose to put the
orchestral performances. That's right.
That you just had?
I didn't just happen to have them. I've been searching. I'm a collector, and so I'm always looking for things. My ears are always to the ground, and, I'm always on the lookout for things. My record collection is about 30,000 records, but I'm also constantly looking for, off-the-air recordings of live performances, and, I'm constantly looking for recordings that we don't know exist, like this one. Whenever I hear anything, I always follow up. A detective.
Congratulations on this 3-CD set. It's really wonderful. And it's a discovery not only about the music of Rachmaninoff, but the person he was.
Yeah, exactly. And you hear something of his personality and how committed he was to the music, because of the playing. And the singing and the grunting and the all that sort of thing. He's really involved. You can tell he is absolutely committed. He is involved, and that is something you never hear on his records. I mean, you hear a musical commitment on his records, but you don't hear that really personal commitment.
That's great.
And I don't know how else to explain it, but that's why I feel it is. I feel so terribly fortunate. This fell into my hands. And it was totally serendipitous. It could have just as easily not. And the recording could still be sitting there with nobody having discovered it.
That's right. It's exciting. Thank you so much.
It is so exciting. And thank you. It's great talking with you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ward Marston.